How do you say your last name, Ingles?
Yeah, Ingles or Angles.
Ingle, well, which one is it?
It's kind of funny. My family's never really it's latched onto one. So Ingles is probably the easiest because it's an E. Hey, this is Mark Ingles of Black Map and Dredge. You're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make him wait for it. Boom.
Ingles, how the hell are you, man? How you doing?
Doing well. Just, kind of a somewhat busy Friday. I got you now, and then I'm off to work at about 5, so.
And we learned from the Ink and Echo podcast, excellent job, guys, by the way, that you work for a audio and video company, right?
Yep. Living in San Francisco, a lot of musicians have slipped into the corporate gig in the way that they can. So a lot of us work on the... behind the scenes on the visual audio stuff for corporations.
Okay, all right.
So not glamorous, but it's good money, and normally you end up working with fellow musicians, so everyone gets along really well.
And when you say it's time for me to hit the road, they go later.
Yeah, they're normally pretty understanding. They know what it takes.
Right.
It's a good gig.
Very good. Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And I'm going to put the link for the Ink and Echo podcast in there because I'm not competitive. I want everybody to listen to that too.
Awesome. That was great.
And we want to thank Bill Meese from E1 for setting this up.
Indeed.
He's the man. He was actually on the show before, and you should listen to...
Oh, cool.
You should listen to his old band.
Nice.
He's no joke. He's a decent guitarist, man.
Excellent.
Anyway, so let's get rolling on this. I wanted to talk to you about, this is kind of timely because the new Black Map in Droves album is coming out shortly. And
One week from today. Yeah.
1 week from today. Man, I hope I get this edited in time. And Bill was good enough to send me a streaming copy of the album. Dude, cool. Killer. I love it. It's really good.
Awesome. Thank you.
I want to talk to you a little bit about it. We can do a little bit of the Dredge stuff. I'm sure people want to hear about that. And man, let's get started. So again, piggybacking off the other podcast that I listened to, you got started playing the drums, and I want to know what went wrong. Why did you go down the path of the guitarist?
Pretty simple, actually. My brother was a drummer, so that's also the reason I started with the drums, because he had a drum set before I had a guitar. And then when I got a bit older and figured out I was able to play the guitar, because his friends would bring over their rigs and just leave them. Because my parents were the cool parents that didn't mind the rock and roll going on,
Okay.
So they would just bring their amps and their guitars over and leave them because they were going to come back and jam, instead of lugging them around.
Right.
Long story short, they let me play their guitars, no problem, when they weren't there. So it made sense for me to get going on guitar because then I could jam with my brother. So my brother and I, like, you know, we weren't a band, but that was my earliest jamming days. Was just my brother and I learning Maiden and Metallica and stuff like that, you know.
This is a very Eddie and Alex Van Halen style story.
Yeah, except we were nowhere near as good.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. So San Francisco and hooked up with Dredge. I definitely want to get into some things. I was actually a guest on a podcast called Respectably Loud. Mm-hmm. It's a buddy of mine who says he wants to talk to people and that he wants to nerd out about one thing in particular. And he knows I'm a music guy and I actually play the drums too. And he said, I want to talk to you about a really weird album, an album that really struck a chord with you. And the first thing out of my mouth was El Cielo.
Cool. El Cielo.
I'm not pronouncing right.
El Cielo.
See? I was. I'm.
It means yeah, the sky. The sky in Spanish.
The sky in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know the album means a lot to me, and I'm still pronouncing it wrong after all.
All good.
Shut up. Shut up, Mark. What are you trying to do? Hijack my podcast or what?
Hey.
So I picked that album just because it was such a unique album, and it kind of really left an impression on me. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that one.
Sure.
If you'd be cool enough.
Of course.
To,
yeah. No problem.
Go down that.
If I can remember everything, it's been a while. It's been 16 years.
Fair enough. Well, anyway, in talking about it, I just remember the Skywalker Ranch thing, and I felt like I mean, who does Skywalker Ranch record? And then I saw Rancid did a record there, and I was,
oh really, nice.
Apparently they don't discriminate. They'll do anything, you know. But
right.
But the reason why I picked that album is because it made me. It kind of started my obsession with sleep paralysis, and I never heard of it before. And hearing all the lyrics for the album, I didn't know what the hell Gavin was singing about. And I started reading all those letters, and they started to frighten me. Really, it was something that I was like, all I know is I don't want this to happen to me.
Right.
I don't know how it happens to people, but I don't want it. And then when you mentioned on Ink and Echo that you actually went through a period of that.
Yeah, actually right around the same time. I haven't had it for a long time now. But back then, about 15 years ago, probably started in college, so just before El Cielo. And it was normally during afternoon naps when you crash super hard, but it's like 3 p.m., you know, after classes or whatever. And I guess my point is it was more common during those, like, very hard sleeping quickly during the day where, you know, you think you're awake and you think you probably are. You can see your room, but you can't move, and there's normally someone talking to you in your ear, whispering in your ear. It's very frightening. But, you know, to me, and what I've read about it, it seems logical that part of your brain's awake and part of your brain's not. So the part that controls vision is awake. So you are getting sensory on the visual end to your brain, but, you know, your motor skills are not awake for the part of the brain that controls motor skills. So you can't move. You're having audio hallucinations, which are the whispers, which is something to do with, you're still partially dreaming, you know? So it's extremely frightening, but it's also, it seems like a way to just maybe describe or hypothesize for, you know, not saying that aliens don't exist, but most likely this is, you know, the abduction cases that people talk about of someone being in their bedroom and they chalk it up to extraterrestrials. Well, you know what? It's most likely probably not that. I'm not enough as a scientist. I'm not, I don't have my degree, but you know what I mean? It's probably more logical that it's your brain absolutely messing with you.
That's crazy.
All sorts of hauntings, ghosts, you know, ghosts in your room, probably ends up that it's your brain, you know, but, that's why it's fascinating. Cause who knows, you know,
it's still scary as shit, though.
Oh, yeah.
I've definitely, and maybe other people can relate with this, I've definitely had moments where I know I'm laying in my bed, I know my eyes are closed, and I know I can see my room.
Right, yeah.
And then I get scared because I think about Dredge and that creepy album, and then my eyes shoot open, and I'm like,
we scare you?
Okay, good.
I get scared when I think about Dredge, too. Scary dudes.
I always think about that. I'm like, oh no, is this one of them?
Think we know, play this though, unified clones, sit on.
that album left a pretty big impact on me, and I really love this seamless way that you guys didn't put lyrics in the album cover.
Right.
You put the letters in there, and then you kind of have to listen to Gavin and read the letters. It makes you listen to the record twice, because now I have to listen to him, and I can't read that while I'm listening to this and everything. And
right.
It really struck a chord with me. That was the first thing I ever heard. And Catch Without Arms was just released at the time that someone played me.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
El Cielo. Am I saying it right now?
Yes. Well done.
Thank you. And then in the same night took me into Catch Without Arms, and I was like, I need it all. I got to have all this now. So awesome. I go back to whenever Catch came out, a couple weeks after Catch came out, that's when I hopped on board.
It's June of 2005, I believe. May or June of 2005.
Summer of 2005 sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy, man. Great stuff. Moving into Catch, I noticed in the notes that Chris DeGarmo was involved. Is that Chris DeGarmo of Queensryche?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
I got to hear this.
Yeah.
I got to hear how you guys know each other.
Well, when we got Terry Date on board to produce it, the label, which was Interscope at the time that we were on, they loved Terry Date as a producer, but they were really anxious for us to work with someone else outside of the band with songwriting, which we were fine with. You know, it's a nice adventure to, you know, pick someone else's brain. So Terry Date, it was his idea. He said, I have a friend in Seattle, because they're both Seattleites. He said, I have a friend in Seattle named Chris DeGarmo, who, you know, was at a band called Queensryche. And if you guys don't mind, you know, we'll go get a studio for a month before we record and kind of suss out the songs we already had. You know, I think we already had a good chunk. We probably already had 10 to 12 songs, but we wanted to write a few more. And the ones we had, we wanted to see if we could hone them more.
Okay.
And we loved El Cielo for its, you know, expansive, sprawling nature. But we really, in a calculated manner, wanted Catch to be a more straight-ahead rock album. I mean, it still has the atmosphere. It's still us, of course. But we wanted to go back to just like a more simple drums, bass, guitar. Mm-hmm. Heavier, you know, more direct sound, if you will. So it was great. We became great friends with Chris. Still are to this day. When I go through Seattle to play, I still normally get to have coffee with him. Or
oh, that's great.
Go out and see his airplanes. He's a pilot now.
What?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he went and got his pilot's license, and he flies charter jets, like business jets. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really cool. He like takes his earrings out before he, you know.
Yeah. Does he still play?
Guitar?
I mean, like, out? Is he, like, doing anything?
No. He still plays. I know he was helping his daughter. His daughter's a great musician. He was helping her produce a record just, like, at home, you know, in Pro Tools rig that he has. But, no, he's not serious anymore.
Okay.
But, I mean, he'll always play. I mean, that's his main love, you know. But great dude. And it was a great experience working with him.
That's amazing.
Overall, it was a really fun time, you know, to record that album in Seattle. Because Terry Date is awesome as well, so we had him and Chris, and Scotty Olson was the engineer on it. We all got along and just had a really fun time making that record.
Right on.
Yeah.
After Catch, you guys came out with, oh God, I remember the title, the parrot, the long one,
the prior, the parrot, the delusion.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. Thank you. There was a lot of conceptual stuff about your like religious extremism, and I mean, you mentioned that on the other podcast too, and I wanted to go a little bit deeper than that, because I'd like to start tying this in with Black Map. I kind of pick up that vibe from Black Map too.
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah.
Is that consistent because of you? Was that lyrical input from you back with Dredge and now with Black Map? Or is that kind of just a universal, you were all on the same page thing?
That's actually an interesting question. The Pariah album, definitely Gavin and I spent a lot of time figuring out what the next album was going to be. He wrote the lyrics, but you know, we definitely had a lot of meetings where we figured out the overall vibe of it. And, you know, it's not just religion on that album. You know, the song Ireland is a sarcastic ploy to people who don't travel or don't get outside their box, whether it's physically or mentally. You know, it's people who deny science. So it's not just religion, but it's the idea of living in a bubble mentally or physically and not, you know, not being able to branch out and gain perspective, which is so important.
Never leave this place. No, I'll never leave this place. I'll never leave the place where I was born.
When it comes to Black Map, Ben Flanagan, the vocalist, definitely writes all the lyrics. But we've been great friends for 10 years, and we are very like-minded. So we do talk about topics and things like that. But we're just very similar. I mean, you know, like I said, we're like best friends. So we have very similar ideas about how perverse religion can be in this world. And that's any religion. It's not attacking a certain religion, you know?
Sure. Understood. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
And it can be a good thing thematic. Too.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It seems thematic. It kind of carried from Dredge into Black Map.
Right.
Ben was involved with Dredge. He played mm-hmm. he played a second guitar and backup sure. vocals. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just, I feel like you guys weirdly pulled off like you started another band and it's kind of an extension of the same band thing. It's sure. it's kind of yeah. like. It's not Dredge. Also, it's not Dredge's next album, but it's as close as you're going to get, man. You know?
Right. And, you know, I love how it's full circle, too, because the drummer in Black Map, Chris Robine, you know, mm-hmm. he influenced me and Dredge back in, you know, the mid-90s, late 90s. I mean, Far was a band that Dredge was influenced by. So it's a great full circle thing going on where, you know, now I'm in a band with this drummer who I absolutely, you know, love, and I get to write music with him, so... You know, if it sounds like Dredge, it sounds like Far. There's a chicken and the egg thing there, so it's pretty cool.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
He's a murderer. He hits so hard, man. I love watching that guy play.
That's fun.
He goofs me up a little bit because he does that left-handed ride cymbal.
Yeah, he's ambidextrous. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so he does. Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm watching the reflection of a drummer in a mirror.
Yeah.
So he kind of messes with me a little bit.
But yeah. Then, you know, when he's on the hi-hat, he's using his left hand on the hi-hat.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool because he's like opened up. He's not doing the cross arm thing,
right?
So it gives you a little bit different groove. You know, it's
right.
subtle,
totally.
Subtle, but it's different. Yeah,
it totally does. Those of us that have the standard crisscross right over left on the hi-hat thing, we have our isms. you have to, just because mechanically your arms over there and not over here. But
and you're striking
Simon
it.
Phillips Gene Hoagland thing.
Yeah, you're striking in a different place. I think you're
right.
A little more straight down instead of from the side.
right on. You mentioned that you don't sing and that Ben actually played as backup in harmonies with Dredge. How do I word that? Is the writing process different for a guitarist that isn't the lead singer? Or is it kind of like the music comes together and Ben fills in the cracks with words? How does that all come together?
I think it varies song to song, you know? Some of the songs I bring in and it's already almost there, and then they give their two cents and tell me that part's crap or that part's great.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's songs that Ben brings in, and those are probably molded more obviously to the vocal melodies.
Okay.
And on this album, you can kind of tell which songs were brought in already with the vocals in mind.
I wish I knew the titles better so I could speak to them a little bit. Well, but fun. I've been listening to it for 2 days, dude. It's unbelievable.
Cool. No, I appreciate that. You know, and the point is that I like that you know, every song can have a little bit different writing process, because then you're probably going to have a little more diversity on the record, you know? Songs that are written just by a guitar player, you know, going to have a different feel than Ben writing it on an acoustic or a bass and having vocals in mind already. That'll give you a nice diversity. You know?
What's the name of the, you guys have like an intro, like a kind of like an intro warm you up track.
Yeah, I think
you have Run Rabbit Run.
Yeah, we call them Transit One. As the just
Transit.
And it teases the two transits in the album. They tease other parts from other songs,
right?
Parts that we thought were kind of thematic to the album.
Very dredge of you.
Can't help it.
Can't help it. That's what you are. You have the Transit, and then you have Run Rabbit Run, which is very Black Map.
Mm-hmm.
Very Black Map. Very very first album.
Cool.
And the name of the next song, Fox something.
Fox Glove. What is the name of that? Fox Glove.
Dude, Fox Glove takes some interesting turns. Like the next song that right after I felt like, here we go, it's Black Map again. I know that first album Inside Out, and I started listening to this one. Run Rabbit Run is a song that could have went on there.
Sure.
Absolutely, in my opinion. It's something, nothing wrong with that because I love the first record.
Right.
Foxglove started down a weird, different path for this record where it started to, I felt like there were really interesting choices for vocals. And I was curious how much Ben had to do with that one in particular.
That is 100% his song. That's a Ben Flanagan song. So it makes sense. You nailed it.
Like, I naturally want to go, when I'm humming it in my head, I naturally want to go harmonize somewhere else. And he made, like, weird choices for notes.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not weird wrong, but he went in a different direction with it. And I was kind of like, I really like that because I'm hearing the automatic harmony in my head, but Ben's singing something else. And I'm kind of getting them both now, you know? I really dug it. And that's just, that's listening to it like four times.
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of intentional, you know, when you're figuring out the sequencing of the album, but we knew that Foxglove was going to be, you know, a bit different for fans that liked the first album. So we thought it'd be kind of cool to bring it out kind of early and set the tone. But, you know, like this album goes to a bunch of different places, you know. There's some very big rockers, and there's some atmospheric ones. And so.
Yeah, it really does. I feel a lot of, you have to excuse me. Hold on a second.
It's all good.
It's kid related.
Gotcha.
Now the neighbor wants to know where his kid is. He's in my yard. Stop texting me. Damn it anyway.
Check the children. Remember that?
Children. I guess. I assume they're okay.
Old urban legend from when I was a kid in the 80s where, you know, the phone rings, you know, the old rotary phone rings and someone just says, check the children. I think they made a terrible horror movie out of it, too.
Oh, that sounds creepy.
Well.
Oh, there it is. I wrote down one. Dead Ringer?
Yep.
Dude, if Dead Ringer is not on the radio as a huge hit in 2017, it just goes to show how messed up everything is. That song, you guys knocked one out of the park.
Cool. I love
Dead
it, too.
Dead Ringer is
Thank
a phenomenal
you.
Song.
It was very different for us, but it's a fun thing with this band where if we go down a path that seems like it's not, you know, first of all, you know, you can do whatever you fucking want with music, right? But it's a fun, it's a fun challenge to go down the path because Ben had that kind of funky bass line. I hate that word funky, but let's be honest, it's kind of the way to describe it. But then it's fun for it's fun for me to put dark guitars over that so that it still doesn't feel like you're trying to be a shit disco band or funk band. You know, it's like he has that bass line. You know what I mean? They're like,
right.
That's the challenge of it. It's like, okay, that bass line's really cool, but how do we bring it back into our world of something a little bit more creepy and ambiguous, you know?
yeah, you have that in you too. You definitely seem to favor the darker stuff.
I've always felt that, and this was not just with music, it's with film, any sort of art form, not being pretentious and saying that Black Map is art, but you know what I mean, any sort of thing that you're creating.
Yeah.
The dark stuff, if it's not contrived and if it feels honest, I feel like it's always going to be more timeless. It's always going to last more. I feel like, you know, when you do things that are on the darker end, it'll hold up to time better. And maybe 10 years from now, someone who's never even heard of Dredge or Black Map can still pick it up and listen to it, and it'll be relevant because it's, you know, it's not fitting in that flash pan, happy era of whatever, whenever it came from, you know. Dark content seems to just stick around.
You know? Right. I agree. It very much, to tie it together, I'm not a film guy. I'm not going to pretend to be. I know that you're really into photography and film and everything, and I liken it to the Hollywood ending, where I just know every time there's a Hollywood ending written, I go, ugh.
Right, and then
that's not how real life goes. you know what I mean? Right. And I want that in my music too. I want a record to punch me in the gut and then not tell me everything's going to be okay afterwards.
Because
we both know it's not going to be. You know,
right.
I kind of get that vibe through the guitars. They're ominous. They're a little heavy. I don't mean heavy just palm mute chug. I mean like they weigh on you. You know, and the black map direction from Dredge, that's what you pull from it. And Ben kind of, because he did the backup stuff, but it kind of went in a direction of like more 3-minute songs that are a little bit more encapsulated as a 3-person band, and they're not quite as like huge and soaring and everything. And that only speaks to the first record. Now the second Black Map record that's coming out in droves in a week is I kind of felt like you're tying that together now. I kind of feel like this is even more of a coalescence, if that's a word.
Sure.
Between the first Black Map had hints of Dredge. Now this one has like even more Dredge in it.
Mm-hmm. Or it's probably more fair to say it has more me in it, not really Dredge, but I think not just me.
Okay.
But I think we had more time to write for this one. We wanted to challenge ourselves a little more with direction, and having more time means that you're going to be able to go down pathways because you look back at the material you have and you say, you know what, we don't really have a track that has this feeling, you know, or we have a, you know what I mean? You can step back, you have more time to step back and take inventory of what you have. So it was kind of a natural thing for us. We all have similar influences, you know, for the most part growing up, what we listened to, you know, Chris, Ben and I. So, you know, we got to reach a little deeper into our tastes of what we enjoy. So
you don't write any lyrics at all?
Nope. I mean, I think there's times here and there where, you know, Ben respects our opinion immensely. So there's definitely times in the studio where we'll give constructive criticism and things like that. But, no, he's the lyricist.
Got it. Okay. For those that haven't heard the album yet, because it's not out, I think at this point, Run Rabbit Run's the only thing that's been released, right?
Well, we've released 3 songs. That's the nowadays it's tricky because it's you have the internet, so you can release songs, but they're not necessarily a single, quote unquote. But okay. but if you pre-ordered the album, you have Run Rabbit Run, you have Ruin, and you have No Color in your in your library. And, okay. and they're streaming online too. I think there's a bunch of different sites, like I think Alt Press, a couple different sites were really cool and streamed those three songs for us. But Run Rabbit Run is the one that's, you know, on radio here and there. Right. I think that's the only one that's still on XM, Sirius, on Octane, I believe, and the only one that has a video. So,
got it. Yeah. Okay. So, can you talk a little bit about the other two songs that have been released a little bit?
Sure.
Do you think it would be all right to play small clips of those two songs?
Oh, play whatever,
already out there.
Play whatever you want.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I don't know what the repercussions
yeah.
are.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, Ruin and No Color are the ones that are out there, so you can do it. You can play the whole song if you want, but there's no reason you can't. I don't think there's any reason you couldn't play anything you want from the record. I don't think that's a bad thing. As long as someone can't, like, you know, rip it from you to spread around.
But, right. I'm very careful that I always taper into it and only play a part of it and come back out.
And to be honest, I wouldn't even mind. That's just label shit, you know, so.
I feel you. I understand.
But yeah, Ruin and No Color are out there in the world, so go for it. Ruin is song.
But do you know, wait a minute. Do you know how, there's a particular kind of dick out there that would listen to an hour and a half podcast to extract the 3-minute song, edit it, cut out what he doesn't want and everything, instead of just paying a fucking dollar.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Just down, like there's trust a particular me. Type of person out
I
there.
I know exactly what you mean. It's amazing what's happened with purchasing music. I mean, there's a good balance now where labels and bands are figuring it out, but when it was a brand new thing, what I used to always think about is how people wouldn't spend $9.99 on an album to download, you know, $10. But they'll go to the bar and drink $60 worth of beer or whatever.
Not
you know,
even think about and it. You yeah, know what? And buy everybody, and then you get drunk enough. You buy everybody drinks.
Well, and guess what? I mean, the analogy is so perfect because you literally just piss that's gone. You just piss it out. Whereas a piece of music can be in your life forever, and it's $10. You know, but you know, that's such an old thing now. It's a funny analogy. But no, I mean, it's just the way things are now. And I think, like I said, labels and bands are becoming more creative with how to, you know, persist forward with the way that the internet has changed things. So in the long run, I think it's a good thing because now we have so much more available at our fingertips from all around the world. You can find whatever you want. And that's just, you know, priceless. So
yeah, right on. Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. I had to yell at that guy that steals songs from podcasts, but yeah. you were going to talk about the two other songs that were released.
Yeah. So Ruin is, like that's song 3, I believe. Right. You know, it's a quicker upbeat one. It's got a very raw feeling to it, dark raw feeling. We love it. It's just you know, it was one of the songs that kind of came together pretty quickly for us. It has that energy that I think if people like the first record, it's in there, but it also has a little balance with the new direction of, you know, atmospheric, big kind of soaring chorus too. And then No Color is a little bit more on the epic side. It's got a lot of parts. It's not a straightforward rock song. It kind of takes you on a journey. There's a reason why we picked those. The label and us, we decided those would be probably the best first impression.
Okay.
But the cool thing is, if you've only heard those three songs, there's so much more going on in the album too, which is a fun feeling to know that, you know, on March 10th, people are going to get the record and, you know, get to explore all this other material, you know?
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Absolutely. Again, I listened to it as a stream, so I wasn't paying attention to song titles because I would have to stare at my computer to do that. But I just listened to the entire thing as one giant 50-minute movement or whatever.
Cool.
And I remember I really liked the way that the album was starting to conclude, and I really felt like it was winding down.
Right.
Then you hit us with Coma Phase.
Yeah, the last track, yeah.
Dude, I love Coma Phase. I kept listening to it over and over and over again. What a killer song.
That's a beast. Yeah, thank you.
Tell me about that one.
Well, let me see. That one was just a big, heavy riff that Ben brought in. And he had the riff, the main, you know, the opening riff, the verse, and then I had this idea because going back to the idea of looking at the material we have and thinking about what else we need, or at least what else we would desire to have, I came up with the chorus because I wanted this cool left turn. So, you know, the chorus doesn't hit you until pretty deep into the song, which I also thought was fun because, you know, the standard rock song is what, A, B, A, B, you know, the first chorus, sure. This one was fun because we hit you with, like, you know, a bunch of different parts, and you feel like you maybe even already heard a chorus. And then I came up with this left turn atmospheric part that I thought could be really grandiose in a cool way, not contrived way. And then, you know, we also thought it'd be cool to have a song. Coma Phase was perfect for this, to have a big, like, just huge outro riff. So we tacked that on the end, you know? And then it seemed like the perfect closer for the album. Don't try and wake me from my coma phase. I could stay here for days. Don't try and take me.
Got an entire album worth,
right?
And it almost felt like a bonus track. You know?
Cool, nice.
The way that you laid it out,
I like.
And I
that.
See the importance. I like, hey man, I'm an idea guy. And then I like that Black Map is thinking in full albums.
Sure.
Like, bring it back, bro. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, I love the whole, like, transitional stuff. You guys are calling them transits on this album. Mm-hmm. Making it an entire thematic. Not a theme album, like a concept record like The Wall or Operation Mindcrime or whatever.
Yeah.
Speaking of Chris DeGarmo, that's probably why that popped in there.
Yeah.
But but the whole, like, this belongs in this on this record.
Right.
And it's all tied together, like the brushstrokes on the Dredge Records and that I love that there's still somebody out there that's not necessarily just thinking about a single.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, Run Rabbit Run makes a lot of sense that it's up front and it's like your leadoff hitter. I get that. That's cool. But it also ties together with Coma Phase and it ties together with the other title that I just said before that I can't remember because I don't even know your songs yet.
But like the Dead Ringer. Yeah.
Yeah. It all belongs on In Droves, not And We Explode.
Cool.
That's that over there, that's that over there, even though they still kind of fit as hits or singles or whatever.
Sure. No, I love it.
So we did a lot of In Droves stuff and everything. I want to talk about And We Explode because this is the one that I know.
Cool.
You guys put this out on Minus Head.
Yep.
And it's killer. And I want to talk about a couple of the songs on here because I suck at something. What's Mark, that? I'm not good at understanding what singers are saying. Even somebody who has vocals like Ben, where he's not singing, he doesn't Tom have York. Like a throat vocally. Yeah, even Gavin, who has like a gorgeous voice, I just don't quite get all the lyrics. You
That's
know what
fine.
I mean?
I know the feeling, and I have an opinion on that. I think sometimes it's not a bad thing. I think some of my favorite artists, I don't know what the song is about, and you kind of make your own idea of what it's about. And sometimes you hear what, then you sometimes you hear in an article what it really is about, and that's not a bad thing, but it's kind of like, okay, I kind of liked my, just what I had projected in my own mind, right? I think ambiguity is a beautiful thing sometimes when it comes to content.
I do too.
Yeah.
I wish more people exercised that practice when it came to social media.
Right.
Shut up already. I have to hear everything.
Yeah, right.
What the hell is Chinaski about?
Chinaski is, I'm drawing a blank. The author, Charles Bukowski, had a character, his last name was Chinaski.
And, okay, all right.
And so that song is influenced by Charles Bukowski because he very, very frequently wrote about the human condition and how strange of a species we are, where we spend our entire life just trying to do these things to make money, to, you know, be able to make more money, or to be able to, just the idea that, you know, life as a human is such a strange thing as animals. You know, we're not like other animals that just live. Like, we have to have these jobs, and we have to, you know, it's the whole idea of, if you really analyze the human way, it's a strange thing as an animal that we've evolved into this, you know. So Chinaski is influenced by Charles Bukowski, and if you listen to the lyrics, that's basically what he's getting at. He's talking about, you know, like, and I think the band Failure has some similar notes on that too, where, you know, you're in a burning room, but you have no desire to get out because you're just like, you're sleeping through the fire is what the lyric is on Chinaski. Because sometimes you just feel like, what am I even doing here? Like, why am I pushing and struggling just to make someone else happy, you know, which is normally the boss of the company or whatever, you know, society.
Yeah.
But anyhow,
absolutely.
But at the end of the day, we all need money too. So
yeah, right on.
Unfortunately,
yeah. I know it's a necessary evil.
Right.
Head for the Hills struck a chord with me because of the, I felt like Head for the Hills is exactly what everybody thinks that they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's full of shit because you follow? Because it's like, let's get away from technology and get away from all this hustle and bustle, and let's just experience things and everything. And I'm going to put this on my Instagram account. I just feel like everybody keeps talking about all these people that go online and shit on everybody and how terrible that is. You've never met one person that's like, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that goes on and talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody's doing it. Somebody's lying.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's the force field behind the keyboard is very powerful.
Oh, right? Yeah.
People
oh,
are
yeah.
protected by like, that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Head for the Hills is that song that made me feel like, oh, God, I feel it. I wish everybody would embrace it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think on a simple and you want to get on board with, and then you don't do it anyway.
Yeah, I think simple on a simpler level too. He's basically just talking about how sometimes you forget how close, you know, especially for us here in San Francisco, you know, we're an hour away from, even half an hour away from the largest, you know, trees in the world. We have Muir Woods right here, which have literally 1,500-year-old redwoods that are, you know, 250, 300 feet tall. And they're right outside the city. Things like that, where on a simpler level, he's just saying you get caught up in your life and every once in a while you remember to go do something, which is whether it's camping or whatever it is out in the woods. Maybe you want to go take some acid and climb a tree. But the idea that once you do it, it's that, oh yeah, why don't I do this more often? I'm so caught up in everything. So it's just that, it's the simplicity of how easy it is to do, to just get out there, you know, and it's not some hippy-dippy song that says go camping, but it's the idea of just like, once you remember how amazing it is, you have to remember to remember again, you know, to get back.
My moment was I put on a Cars record and ate yogurt in my basement on a Saturday morning one time, and I left my phone upstairs plugged in. I was like, get away from me.
Nice.
I'm going downstairs and pretend it's 1984 again, you know? And I ate a pineapple Greek yogurt and
just sat
there and watched the record spin, and I was like, it's probably the happiest moment of my life. I feel so unplugged and disconnected, and I don't know what shit just hit the fan on Twitter, and I don't care. I'm just going to sit here and space out. You know what I'm saying?
Totally hear you.
Stranger is the song that hit me as the most dredgy on the first Black Map album, probably because of the intro. Because as soon as the intro is over, you guys are like, and you guys come in with that gong gong, that, you know,
right?
But that kind of hit me as that reminded me the most of Code coming into also, but
cool.
But Stranger definitely hit a chord with me too. Can you tell me about that one?
Stranger was actually probably the most Frankenstein, if you will, of the songs.
Oh, okay.
It came towards the end of the writing process where we had these parts sitting around. We were like, these parts are great, but how do we put them together? So we did it a little bit hastily, but I love how it turned out. It's an absolute challenge to play live. But we Frankensteined it together, and I think we did a great job. I love the intensity. Verses almost kind of remind me of Slayer a little bit, but yeah, it's another one of those songs which In Droves has as well, where there's lots of parts, you know, kind of takes you on a little cruise, you know.
Right on.
Which I love, but yeah, we kind of in a fun way had the challenge of putting those chunks together like that.
Black at the flag. I don't want to steal too much time from In Droves either, because that's the main reason that I wanted to talk to you.
All good.
The main reason Bill made me wait 3 months.
Bill's gonna be upset.
I went after you a while ago, and he was like, "Why don't we wait till the new record's coming out?" And I was like, "Damn, dude, that's like, all right, I'll wait."
Nice.
So here we are.
Cool.
It's such a wide open question, but what are you guys trying to get across within Droves, as far as like what direction did Black Map take from And We Explode to In Droves? What's the mission statement?
Well, I say with great respect. That's one of the dumbest questions I've ever heard.
Mission statement. Well, I guess not to repeat myself, but like I said, we wrote the first record in a quicker manner. And okay. we didn't think too hard about, normally thinking too hard is bad anyway, but we didn't, how do I say this? We kind of just went full straight ahead with And We Explode, except for the very last track. We put on that atmospheric track as a closer. Point is on this one, we had more time. I think each one of us brought in more ideas, grasping from our entire life of music that we've enjoyed. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. there's going to be way more influence from not just heavy rock bands on In Droves. There's influence from, you know, things that we all listened to growing up, whether it's, you know, The Police or Rush, or for a band, it's what's that band he loves from North Carolina? I'm forgetting now. But bands and musicians that are outside of the it'll come to me. But bands that are outside of the hard rock realm, you know, I think we just started to grasp a little more. And you know, I've always been a big supporter of the more you grab from your influences and then put it into your project, it's going to be even more original, right? You just got to grab,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. So the harder the you know, the better the artist, the harder they bite. But you got to bite from many, many, many influences and then make it your own, you know.
I just recently said on one of the shows, your favorite bands are the ones who did the best job ripping off their favorite bands,
right? But rip off's a weird term because influence, hard, yeah. But I hear you. But it's also doing right. it from many, and right. also doing it from maybe artists that are outside of your style, because then it almost comes from left field. Elbow is another huge influence for Ben and I. Absolutely love Elbow. And
I've never listened to them.
They're absolutely amazing. But if you listen to it, and if I told you that we definitely were influenced by them, but they're not a hard rock band. They're like this very symphonic, atmospheric. You know, they're closer to Pink Floyd and Peter Gabriel and things like that, you know.
Right on. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what we're trying to do, is just branch out and challenge ourselves to not, you know, we are a hard rock trio with tinges of metal and tinges of this and that. But I think we definitely were interested in, you know, challenging ourselves to see where else we could kind of take it, you know.
Right, very good. Yep, I know exactly. I hear that. I know exactly what you mean. A lot of heavy-handed riffing with the guitars, which is usually what that band sounds like. And then there's a lot of atmospheric stuff, which is usually what that band sounds like.
Right.
And when you can marry the two together, mm-hmm. and tie it together with Chris just kicking the shit out of you, and Ben has like a really forceful voice, but at the same time has like a gorgeous voice. Like seriously, the dude's gifted. He reminded me.
I agree.
Gavin. I used to put Gavin on another level, and then I heard In Droves, and I was kind of like, I kind of feel like Ben deserves the same kind of accolades. Maybe because your guitars and your influences are kind of making everything sound similar to me. But there were a couple moments on In Droves where I just felt like he doesn't sound like Ben anymore. I feel like he graduated to like another vocal level or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, he definitely, he worked his ass off on this album. He definitely pushed himself to, you know, branch out a little bit and try different things, you
right.
know? I mean, he did an amazing job. So I totally mm-hmm. agree. You know, he's not the type of guy to ever be complacent, you know, which is amazing right. to have with a vocalist. He doesn't just come in and clock out. You know, he's constantly thinking about, you know, what the thing is he wants to do on this to to, you know, push to the next spot, right? You know, we didn't want to make And We Explode 2, even though we love that record as well. But
yeah,
you know,
so. I would have been fine with And We Explode 2, but In Droves is no disappointment at all. I love. It's, you guys went in a different direction without going in a different direction.
Sure,
it's not like all of a sudden you put out some weird, crazy album that doesn't sound like what everybody is used to.
Right, right.
It makes sense. It's the next chapter. There I go with my chapters again. Okay, running out of time here. You know what's coming. I have to ask what the status of Dredge is. What's the latest?
So Dredge is recently we've been talking and hanging out. We went and got dinner a few months back. Everyone's doing great. We're still great friends. You know, we're brothers. I mean, we've been doing this and playing music together and knowing each other since the early 90s, so we're family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've just kind of thrown out ideas to each other about eventually writing new material. So it's just going to be about balancing all of our lives and getting the timing right, and make sure when we do it, it's not just to do it. It's like if we're gonna do this, it's going to be full bore, and it's going to be, you know, 110%, even though I hate when people say that. You know what I mean? We're going to jump into it. We're not going to just like get in a room and just try to write some stuff. It's going to be like, we're writing, we're doing this. And just the initial discussions right now. It's cool just to talk to everyone again. You know, we've all kept in touch, but you know, keeping in touch as adults nowadays can also mean you don't talk to each other for months, you know, and it's no big deal. We're all busy, you know? Right now with Black Map, I'll be touring most of 2017. So, and they know that, and they 100% respect from them. So, sometime this year we will probably start the process, but right now it's just, the initial conversations, and, it's great. It feels good.
What do you guys have lined up for 2017? What tours do you have? Are you planning on touring or do you have anything done?
Yes. Yeah, no, we're good to go on a couple of runs. We're just kind of finalizing, you know, some of the logistics of it. But the first one coming up is we're main support for Nothing More. And we'll be doing the South and the East Coast and the Midwest, I believe, in April and May. And then we have another tour lined up, which I unfortunately cannot say because it's not announced yet. That's just the way it goes, you know.
Okay.
But that'll be July and August, the entire country, another main support for a bigger band, which we love. So, at least we're working. You know, our album comes out. We're not going to be sitting on our asses. So we'll be out there playing the new songs and hopefully making some new fans. You know.
Yeah. Right. You're coming to Pennsylvania again?
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Good. Glad to hear that. I saw you guys at just last summer. I saw you at Music Fest in Bethlehem, and you and I were
cool.
Talking
yeah, as you were saying,
before.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Phenomenal show, and of course, like all Music Fest concerts, it got interrupted by lightning and the end of the world.
Crazy.
And Armageddon. Yeah, killer show, man. Killer show.
Cool. Thanks.
92 degrees that day. I remember.
Yeah,
I remember
that
getting
tour
off work
was
going. I'm not going to shower. I'm just going to go see the show and shower later.
that tour was unreal because, you know, we would go on at 6 p.m. outside, and you know you're drenched in sweat before you play one note. You know, our drummer Chris was. I mean, man, he got through that tour and it was unreal. I mean. Every gig, you know, we're only playing half an hour sets too, but coming off that stage at 95 degrees, 100% humidity or whatever, and he's coming off the stage like he's just dying. He would just lay down on the dressing room floor, and we just like, you know, put cold towels on his neck. He was absolutely dead. But the point is how interesting it is that that's the early slot. By the time Chevelle and Bush would get on, then that's when the lightning would come in, right? Because it always comes in later, you know. So you're dying of heat for the Dead Deads and Black Map for our, you know, the opening slots, and then Chevelle and Bush, you have to worry about getting hit by lightning. It was just like, man, every day was kind of like that too, because it was all Midwest and East Coast, and it was July, you know. So, but it was a really fun tour though. It was a really amazing
tour.
That
summer around here, you have so much pollen on your car that you can't even get in without sneezing and like feeling like you're congested. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the sky goes completely black, and then the evenings are actually kind of nice if you can survive the day, you know.
Evenings are great.
Dude, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys when you swing through. And
cool. Yeah, we should have dates up. The first tour, I believe we have dates up for the Nothing More tour. And there will be some dates added to it. So there's an initial list of dates. You can go to our Facebook or whatever and see that there and see where you can catch us. And if we don't come through on this one, I'm almost positive that one in July we're hitting. I'm almost positive we're hitting Philly at least. So, but yeah, check it out.
Cool, very good, man. Happy to hear it, Mark. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. You got to go to work.
And, thank you, Travis.
I have to go find my kid. I hope he's up there.
That's probably a good idea to find the kid, you know? Awesome.
So,
thank you.
Pick a tune from the new album. What are we going out with?
Oh, well, we just released No Color. You want to do that one since it's kind of fresh on the interwebs?
Yes, I do. So we'll play a little bit of No Color. Thanks again, Mark. Take care.
Thank you, Travis. Have a good one.
Grows is a part of Lavera Productions.
High five. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at As The Story Grows and visit the site at asthestorygrows.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything and subscribe to my YouTube page so you can see unedited interviews. Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch. If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode, or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. If you can't afford to donate, that's totally okay. Tell a friend, retweet me, and give me a good rating on iTunes. Send your guest requests and any feedback for the show to asthestorygrows@gmail.com, and thank you so much for listening today.
Take care. Bye.